everyone. Very glad to be with all of you and with my colleague and friend Newt. I've been with NBC, doing NBC for about the last 12 years. And as many of you may know, my main focus is NBC mediation, mediating conflict. But NBC as spiritual practice has been a very long time interest of mine, and just spirituality in general has been a big interest and study and practice of mine for many, many years. And the integration of the two and how to explicitly have the spiritual side of things in mind when practicing. You don't need to do NBC, but it's meaningful to me. So I'm really excited to share with you many of the same things I'm using as I have in the past, but some newer refinements. And Newt and I have been working together for 5-6 years now, and Newt and I were working together when I was offering this in the past, and Newt has quite a wide background in spiritual practices and interests. And Newt's also very involved in the NBC mediation work as well. So I asked Newt to do this with me, and we've come up with some things I hope you'll enjoy. Newt, anything you want to say?
I think all I want to say is that I'm very in touch in this moment with just how very real for me this coming together of NBC and spiritual practice, whatever spiritual practice might be, you know, so varied for different people. But the investigation of the two, which, as John said, became part of my dialogue with John pretty early on in the time that I knew him. And I was noticing even just today in dialogue with someone how the things that we're going to be talking about in this class, extremely rich and real practices that I do when in real dialogue with other people, you know, about whatever it is, you know, a project or a plan or a trip to the country or whatever it might be. So I'm excited to be on this call and having this opportunity to talk about these things with others who are interested and to share this experience with John. Yeah, I think that's what's there for me to say at this moment.
I'm noticing how much I'm enjoying doing this together, Newt. Realize how nice it feels to do it together. I also feel a little nervous about, you know, kind of keeping it real, keeping it useful. There's part of me that really wants to discuss the kind of philosophical points of things. And I think it could quite easily, though, turn into something that might not be as practical and useful with too much of that. So I'm hoping for kind of a balance of some theory, some philosophy mixed in with lots of practices that Newt and I have found valuable and things we'll share with you to do on the phone together and then try out in your life if you want. And also to have it be a real exploration together, not just Newt and I sort of sharing with you about what we do, but also hearing kind of a back and forth. It's a dialogue and exploration together of some of these ideas and concepts and what is NBC and spirituality and spiritual practice. And again, it's the first time I've ever done this on a teleclass, so I'm just kind of open to learning a lot as we go, as well as sharing what we have to share. How about we do a little overview? In terms of the overview for the four classes, the things I want to cover tonight, or we want to cover, have to do with looking at observation, feelings, needs, and requests from what I think of as sort of a mindfulness or spiritual perspective of practicing presence, and then four spiritual principles that we found can go with those components to basically spend time on that and how those can be some practices around that. There is a handout. There's an outline for tonight's class. And next week's class, what we have in mind is to look at the relationship with what Marshall calls the beloved divine energy or God or source. In my experience, people in the NBC circles don't really talk too much about that, and I think because we all can have so many different beliefs about it, but that I figured let's take it head on and just try talking about that a bit. It just seems like a really important thing to me anyways. It's important to me. And then some different practices around that. And the third class, talking about how we express the spirit in us, the life in us, doing things. There's an expression I like using, Marshall Rosenberg, the founder of NBC, as kind of a touchstone, if possible, because I like what he's originated. Many of you maybe heard him say, not doing things unless it's play. So what does that really mean? What does it mean to kind of live your life that way and the courage it takes and all that?
And one implication, John, that I liked when you said this to me when we were talking about this was how it has perhaps an implication of a willingness to look bad.
A willingness to look bad, yes. Yes. And then lastly, the last class being about radical empathy, feeling a certain oneness with the people that do the things that are most troubling and even traumatic for us, that to still find a way to see that sense that we and others are not separate at a certain level. So that's to give just a thumbnail sketch. Anything you want to add, Newt, of those other classes and what we've talked about that we want to offer, you want to say at this point?
I guess just there's a way in which in certain spiritual traditions, sometimes the ego, which I suppose we could often identify with to some degree, there's some degree of overlap with the jackal thinking or jackal speaking part of ourselves. And I don't want to make some concrete join between those two things. But, you know, in NBC we talk about the jackal, and in other traditions there's talk about the ego, and, you know, other expressions I've come across like the pain body and what the pain body gets up to in relation with others and this kind of thing. And there can sometimes be a certain, what I think of as a vilification of the ego, some way in which we can hold the ego, whatever that might be for us, as somehow wrong, something to be got rid of, something to be tamed, something to be quietened, something of that sort. And, you know, going from Marshall's suggestion to love the jackal in yourself, love the jackal in others, my CNBC is this very compassionate, kind approach where nothing has to be vilified, including our own habits that we don't enjoy or our own fears and that kind of thing. So that's just a part of the second class that I'm looking forward to talking more about.
And then one last thing that for me is part of the overview is the three words from the title: transformation, transcendence, and self. It seems to me one idea is to use those three concepts as a kind of lens or a touchstone to keep coming back to, a sort of meta framework throughout the different sessions that we have together, the four classes. So I thought I'd define, I'll say for me, and then Newt, if you want to add or subtract anything, feel free. A transformation. What I'm going to say about these things, I've been influenced a lot by the writings of Ken Wilber, who's pioneering work in integral theory and practice. So in that I got this idea of the difference between transformation, transcendence, and self. So I'll just kind of say how I'm currently holding that. And transformation I think of as that horizontal growth that is more about acquiring skills and knowledge and a kind of shifting the form or expanding the form of our abilities. In contrast to transcendence, what I think of as like more of a vertical growth of moving from one level or stage of development to another. In addition to Ken Wilber, I've read some about this thing called spiral dynamics. It's a body of work that looks at how human beings evolve at an individual level and a collective or societal level, cultural level. And this idea that we move, that evolution with human beings moves through different stages and levels. And like in cognitive development, how young children grow in their abilities cognitively, and that there's these levels and stages that developmental psychologists have studied and researched, and that can extend in adulthood and to kind of more spiritual seeming sounding to me levels. And so that idea of sort of that vertical movement that's about literally kind of a shift to a different way of seeing the world, a whole different way of experiencing self and other, that we go through those kind of changes as well. And then self, the biggest question for me, I mean, you talk forever about what is self and is there a self, but the question for me about that idea of self is the goal of myself to, like, as a sort of this separate self that wants to connect with an other, whatever that other, that sacred otherness is, it's kind of this, the way I experience a sort of me-ness and I-ness that longs to kind of understand and connect with this larger source of things, but as a kind of sense of other, versus the self in other traditions is about that we are that otherness, that we all each are that God quality, whatever. And the goal is sort of to more and more identify with that we are that. So the self with a capital S and self-realization being kind of about that. So that's just a question. I like it as an open question of kind of self in terms of the practice of what's the practice in relation to my sense of self that's about transformation and transcendence. Newt, anything you want to add to those three things?
I've been checking in as you've been talking, and I think what appeals to me most is, just as you've suggested, to kind of refer to them as we're dealing with other individual pieces of the course.
Okay. All right. How about we go into following the outline, talking about observation, feeling, needs, and requests as mindfulness practice, practicing presence. I feel like I've learned a lot about presence from listening to Eckhart Tolle and other people. Newt, who've been the people you've been most influenced by in terms of presence, is what presence means, and that sort of practice of mindfulness?
Well, certainly being in NVC group circles as a participant and watching the response of the facilitator, either Marshall Rosenberg or John or Ike Lasseter for me in my early period, was certainly a huge lesson in presence in the moment of things unfolding, including sometimes things which were quite loud or intense in some way. So real practical lesson there. And other influences for me, certainly I've read and enjoyed Eckhart Tolle quite a lot for the last 10 years or so. And I'm also very in touch with a variety of teachers from the traditions of, I suppose, the term Advaita Vedanta might be something which some people know, non-duality, non-dualism. So various teachers from that realm. There are some names around, Adyashanti, Muji, Tony Parsons, Jeff Foster, Pamela Wilson. There are a number of teachers that I've really, John Burney, that I've enjoyed sitting with and experiencing again just very practical thing really of they sit somewhere and say, okay, who wants to say something, and then they sit there and be present with whatever gets said by whoever has something to say. And so that's been a great, great source of learning for me about what I keep referring to here as practical presence. Yeah, I guess that's something we could expand on.
All right. So I want to just go right into some practices and do them with you on the phone here so you can experience it a bit. Actually, I like giving a little bit of framing that I see nonviolent communication often usually taught, in my experience, from the perspective of the language. So I think of the four components of observation, feeling, needs, requests, so the basic elements of the language of NVC, the language of needs, and practicing and learning and practicing all about sort of putting it into language. Those, what's the language of observation, the language of feelings, the language of needs, the language of requests, being clear about those distinctions between observation and evaluation and feelings and thoughts, needs and strategies and requests and demands. But I've realized for quite a while now that I could also think of those four elements as each one of them a kind of a portal or a doorway into this way of being that is less caught in the form of things, more into connection with the oneness of it, and as a way to practice presence. So I'll offer that to you now. And observation, so just the word observation, instead of just the observation language of observation, to also as a reminder, as I'm holding these four aspects of NVC in my mind, that observation can also be the act of observing, of being the witness. So I invite you to do it just right now as you're listening to my voice, to identify with the part of you, part of us, that can observe, that can be present in the sense of mindful, aware, attention, looking around the room that you're sitting in, hearing whatever sounds you're hearing, noticing the difference between the pure perception versus any thoughts or evaluations of them, or even labels, just even putting a label on, if you look around the room that you're sitting in, how quickly the mind comes in to put a label like lamp or flowers or plants or book or chair, you know. The difference between that, the word, the label, the language, and the act of just observing. For me, it's like the essence of observation versus evaluation. The being, that mode of witnessing. To see if you can look at something in the room that you're in, separate from any thoughts or labels about what you're looking at. Just looking, perceiving. Or a label comes, see if you can just sort of let it go. One practice that I found very useful to do, practice being present, to observe, to kind of using that word, observation, okay, observing. Another thing to observe would be thoughts, observing your mind, observing the thoughts that go through the mind. Helps me just, again, to use that, the pointer of the word observation to remind me, I could maybe step back a little bit and notice my thoughts, be the observer of my thoughts. But many of you have studied different types of meditation practice about this kind of thing. So to me, it's just an integrating with, in terms of integrating with NVC, it's just to think, oh, that component, that observation could be, I could also use it like that, as well as the language. Newt, do you want to add anything to that?
Standing here doing it, and I wanted to comment on what a rarity it is in a certain way to do that just with things. I do this in interaction with people, observing their words and their bodies are doing, faces and so on, but to do this with things. And I just noticed a great stillness about doing this with the things in the room, and also something which I might call affection. There was a sense of affection for the things in the room. That feels like some kind of small revelation to me. So that's what's coming up for me in the moment.
And I'm also glad you included people. It's a way to be with people, to just observe and be present in this way. Yeah. Anybody else want to, if you tried doing this while you were just sitting here with us, you want to share an experience or question, anything? Leslie.
I'm noticing my thoughts and how they're really clouding me in. I'm sort of not even able to really stand back and identify them. I'm noticing that I feel very nervous to press the button and speak, and that's sort of getting in my way because I really want to connect. I heard you inviting us all before to be part of the conversation, and for me I really want that connection, but I find myself being very nervous to contribute, so I just thought I would press the button and share that with you.
Ah, I'm so glad you did. Thank you for doing that. And if I heard you, that you noticed, you kind of had some sense of watching your thoughts about that. Some thoughts how am I going to be perceived or judged or something like that. Some kind of noticing of some thoughts going through your mind about that.
Yeah, that's right. And then
some
I decided,
to
well,
hold back.
It's like I can be clumsy. It's okay. I want to just really allow myself to do those things because I hold myself back. If I don't, just take a little tiny risk like talk to a few people.
Yeah. Oh, and I wonder if just even as you noticed the thoughts a bit, it gave you a little bit of like, oh, but I could do something different. I do have a choice. I could just hold back or I could press one.
Exactly.
Yeah?
Yeah, it just kind of breaks the ice and gives me a choice. Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Thank you.
You so much.
And thank you for the connection. I do want to be involved.
I appreciate you hearing that because it's really, yes, it gets, I'm so grateful to have Newt with me, as I said, and it can still feel a little bit almost lonely of having everybody on mute. And I really understand why NVC Academy does that, for the quality of the recordings, for the quality of the, so there isn't background noise on the calls. And yet I just have a sense of being sort of cut off from all of you. So, like talking into a void. So it's thank you. I really do like hearing from people and having a sense that there's a flow and connection back and forth. So thank you for hearing that, Leslie, and responding.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else before we go to the next component? Healing. Oh, yes. Chris.
Just noticing thoughts. I was helped by Ike Lasseter's, I think it was Ike's, comment about the thoughts being like mosquitoes buzzing just around the edge of my consciousness a lot of the time, and how much I've loved the NVC practices of getting out the jackal cards and actually capturing the thoughts and plonking them on cards and naming them, and then they, instead of being me, they become separate to me. The me who's noticing them is somehow in control rather than the thoughts themselves.
I like that. Well, and I just like that you so much that you said that, Chris, because it reminds me of something I've been reading from different sources lately, of one way to define, like that vertical, what I talked about, that vertical growth and development is moving from subject to object in the sense of, see if I can explain it. I've been reading other people. I don't know if I can explain it. Well, Newt, I might need your help. But this idea that at one level, what we perceive is we are this, just the subject. There really is no ability to observe it because we're so in it. We're the subject, yeah? And but then the ability to actually move from something that is a subjective of experience of I am this to I am observing this. So object, it's an object to witness, to bear witness to in some way. That's a marker of actual cognitive and all kinds of maybe types of growth, of expansion of our sense of self in a good way, healthy way. And so, Chris, what you just said for me is a way to actually reinforce doing that is by writing them on cards. And what was it? You write them on cards. Is there something else you do with that, or just the act of writing them down on note cards? Kind of being able to flip through them as something you can just kind of watch and look at. Is that?
One way is to have a bunch of jackal thoughts on cards, such as one card saying, I should, I ought to, I have to. It just reminds me, there's a bunch of those kinds of thoughts. And another way I've done is just writing them all down, that exercise of writing them all down, all the thoughts, and then going back through all the thoughts, instead of the thought just being, I'm a silly idiot, adding that piece, I'm telling myself I'm a silly idiot.
Yes. Yes. There's something about the image of like putting them down on each thought on a different note card and having them just in kind of being able to flip through them. I just really like that idea of reinforcing, making them into these objects that we can observe. And I like what Newt was saying, like with affection even, or with care, but something that reinforces that a bit, moving from it being a subjective to a more of an object of our awareness. Well, thank you, Chris. Newt, anything you want to, I don't know how well I did in trying to explain that concept, but anything you want to help me with there?
Yeah, I was just going to say that my affection was falling upon actual physical objects, but when you mention it, there is something that I notice in facilitating NVC circles, that sometimes people do start to develop an affection for certain recurring thoughts which come up. You know, like there can be a great suffering which comes for the person who repeatedly responds to circumstances in their life with the thought, I'm so stupid, for example. But then it can happen that when just observing the thoughts, and up comes the old friend, I'm thinking of Marshall referring to shame and depression and guilt and anger as friends, that old friend of I'm so stupid just shows up. It's like this character that plays a part in your life, and it shows up. And there is some possibility when just observing it show up of actually finding that one has some affection for it, and the suffering is somehow removed or reduced in some way. So anyway, I just wanted to tag that on there.
The affection coming just, as you were saying, as you observed objects in the room, the same kind of a feeling of affection by observing the thoughts in that way. I like that. I'm going to pay attention to that more. Okay. So So how about we move to feelings? And again, in NVC learning, often the focus is on the feeling language, the sheets and sheets of feeling words to work with, and distinguishing feeling words from thought words. And sometimes this point doesn't come through as much, as I think it's so crucial that to not just label our feelings, although I've heard that there's research that says just being able to label our feelings like anger, hurt, sadness, anxiety, whatever it is, just being able to label that does create some kind of calming effect in the nervous system, being able to put language to our feelings. And I don't know if they've studied needs, but my guess is even more so with needs, and that's been my experience. So although that's very helpful, there's another piece of it that I think is really important, is to feel our feelings, to feel, and feel in a way where we're not thinking. It's a practice of presence, being present. Maybe I should just define presence. What I mean by that word is either there are no thoughts in my mind, or the thoughts, they're not sticking anywhere. I've never said it that way. I kind of like it. The thoughts aren't getting stuck anywhere, and kind of, they just flow through. And this presence is like this empty, I'm really identifying with this kind of empty space of my mind. My mind being this spacious emptiness, but that's full of life and beauty, and feels good to be that awareness that doesn't have much thinking going on. Maybe just thinking when I need to, when there's something to focus on or decision to make. But for the most part, there could just be a calmness and stillness. So there are all these metaphors in Zen and Buddhism and all, about this, the lake and the pond that has no ripples on it, you know, the still, calm surface of a lake and all that. So for me, that's presence, is that quality of mind where there's a stillness. So, and in my own experience, it doesn't necessarily mean there are no thoughts. Even if there are thoughts, there's this sense that they're just almost in the background, or they're just coming in to be helpful, but I'm using thoughts, but I'm not being used by them. I'm not being run by them. So that's what I mean by presence. So feeling as a way to deepen that experience or support getting into that place of presence of the mind, feeling what we're feeling, especially when I don't want to be feeling what I'm feeling, when I'm resisting that, and I am suffering, and I don't want to be suffering, and I just want to get away from how I'm feeling. And I think in that way, sometimes we can use language and our thinking about how we're talking about how we're feeling as a way to actually not feel. Have you been with somebody, or you've kind of noticed in yourself, where you're just talking and talking and talking about the feeling, or there somebody else is, but you don't get a sense that they're really connected to the feelings. They're just up in their head sort of talking about it. So as beneficial as putting language to our feelings is, I think it can sometimes be a way to avoid it. I've experienced and believe that there's something very powerful and healing and even transformative about the willingness to feel whatever it is that's going on in our bodies. So I invite you to do it right now as a practice, something you can do in your daily life, in addition to observing your surroundings and thoughts, is to feel your body and see if you can feel in a way that isn't about thinking or labeling your feelings. Just as you were observing this outside space or your thoughts, see if you can feel the feelings in your body now, in this moment. Feeling the emotions. And there's just the sensations. Your sensation level. Tightness or movement of energy in your body, or surface you're sitting on, the temperature in the air. All the little sensations in your body. Whole body. And I notice as I do this, I tend to relax. The muscles of my body start to release, just by being in my body, present in my body. And there's a level, I think, of kind of three levels, the emotions and then the sensations is kind of another level. And then and I think even like a deeper level for me is the feeling of the kind of the aliveness of whatever's the animation of my body, the life energy, the life force of my body that's animating. We call the aliveness itself, you know, that's just kind of a feeling of that. For me, it's like a pulsing. There's the heartbeat that pulses through us, and maybe that's it. But it's something about just sort of feeling this, pulse of just feeling that deep undercurrent of. May notice thoughts coming in. For me, it's just observing those thoughts. Going back to feeling. The practice I do quite regularly. If you want to share an experience of doing that or any comment, question. Sylvia.
I was noticing as I was noticing my feelings that I was trying to label them, and I noticed under that was some fear, and that sort of reminded me that I do that a lot, actually, even in bigger situations. I was going to say that when I try to control it, that actually I'm afraid, and that it's so relieving when I can just believe that it'll turn out okay and I don't have to get worried about controlling it.
It being your feelings?
Yes. Or it even then goes into bigger concepts like what other people are doing.
Controlling what other people are doing?
Yes. Thinking that maybe I should try, but then I realize that under that is actually a fear of what might happen if I didn't do that.
So are you saying as you just now, as you let yourself feel some of what was going on in your body, that noticing that fear, some fear coming up about what things people might do, things that could happen to you, that there might be some pain for you or something scary, just noticing that there's fear there, yeah?
Yes, it's not a real big thing like where I'm frightened, but I noticed that it was there beneath after I had the feeling, then to analyze it or stop it or whatever, instead of just being comfortable with letting it be.
Letting it be. Okay, so then you notice the kind of wanting to do something with it instead of just being with it and feeling it.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Noticing that that's very familiar to me, that I do that a lot.
Yes. Me too.
So thank you.
I have something I wanted to tag on there, John.
Yes, Newt.
A couple of things, actually, but just one immediately that you haven't made it explicit already. The practice of NBC can sometimes be used as a way of not feeling, just like so many other things. And I see this happen, that there's something about such beauty, we're about to start talking about needs, and there's such beauty in getting in touch with needs, connecting with needs, my needs, other people's needs, that I certainly have had the experience of almost being in a hurry to get there. Because it was such a revelation to me to start learning about needs and making space for awareness of needs in my life. And Jesse Weins, I think it was out of his mouth that I first heard, before naming what you're feeling, feel. So even before naming the feeling, you know, picking out your feelings list or your feelings cards or your own mental vocabulary, before even doing that, stop to feel. So way before getting to the needs, perhaps, that might be associated with the feeling, stop to feel. And that was a great moment of learning for me, which I like to return to frequently and tell other people about.
I just wanted to share that one of the ways that working with feelings and becoming aware of feelings has served me in my spiritual growth is that in all my years of meditation, something the ability to stop my thoughts has continued to be very challenging. I find that by going into feelings, it occupies my consciousness in a way that has helped liberate me from my thoughts, so that now I'm much more aware that my thoughts are just things. There's so much less attachment. And I'm just trying to share that it becomes having the experience of feelings fills me enough that I can quiet my mind, and I'm thoroughly enjoying that.
I like the way you said that, Dee, that the feeling of our feelings really supports that, being able to be present to our thoughts as well. It's just something about how the one supports the other. I liked how you said that. Reminding me a little bit of something else I wanted to say about feelings is I heard that Sufi mystic Gurdjieff had a phrase called conscious suffering, I believe. The idea that if you're suffering, and I define suffering as when we're thinking in a way that's creating that suffering. I think of as pain is a natural, we feel pain anytime our needs are not being met or we perceive our needs not to be met. We're going to feel pain, and that's how living organisms are hardwired. But that human beings, we have this gift of a kind of intelligence that allows us to suffer as well as do all kinds of cool stuff. But we get to suffer too, because we can think in a way about right, wrong, good, bad, have to, should, must, punishment, reward, all that we talk about in NBC. We can think in a way that really creates a lot of suffering in addition to on top of the pain. But that there's something, and I think, again, it reminds me of what you were saying, Newt. We can, in NBC, we want to go so quickly, translate our judgments into what are the needs and try to get to some peace and equanimity, and that we try to get away from the suffering. And, of course, there's something to that, not wanting to just sit in it in an unhealthy way. But I do think there's some way of, as a first step, being willing to feel the suffering also. Before I try to transform it and change it and shift it, there's something about being willing to sit in the fire of that in a way that doesn't feed it, doesn't stoke the fire of the suffering and make myself, by thinking more about it and spinning around in it. It's not that. It's just the being willing to sit there. And Pema Chodron's another great source for this. Written some great books about when things fall apart, and a lot of the books about this quality of our humanness when we deal with this, all this stuff that comes up in us and we suffer, how powerful it can be to stay present to that. And that Gurdjieff, the Sufi mystic, I would say that there's a kind of a burning up of the ego, whether that's a useful concept to you or not, but that whatever the thinking is that limits us, that by being willing to sit in the pain and the suffering in a conscious way, in a way that's just being mindful and present and the observer of it and feeling it, but not being caught into it in an unhealthy way, that there's something that is actually transformative. It actually helps create that transformation and transcendence to these other expansions of ourself. To tie in all those three things. And I find that very useful. I'm amazed how often I forget it, though. How quickly I want to, if I'm feeling depressed, anxious and fearful, or upset or angry about that, how much I want to just get the hell away from that. And as Newt was saying, just even use NVC to just how quickly can I get away from it. And whenever it's about avoidance and I don't find it's as useful, that's another aspect of this to me of feeling that suffering in a way that not to stay there beyond a point that it's helpful, but just to be able to feel that as well. All right. But Newt, I do want to check with you. Any ways that as you listen to that it could be clearer, or you want to add your experience?
I actually just want to finish off this piece on feeling just with a little thing that I like. Some people might recognize it and know the source of this, where I first heard this, but It's another vantage point on the whole notion of just feeling. And so I'm going to invite everyone to do it just for a moment, and we can expand on it in other classes perhaps. But so here it is, very simple practice. What I want to invite everyone to do is to close your eyes and hold one of your hands up in the air. Maybe hold it in front of your face, but your eyes are closed. And now just within yourself, look for the answer to this question. How do you know that your hand is still there? And I'm asking you to hold your hand totally still, not to kind of tap the fingers together or anything of that sort, just to hold it totally still and relaxed in the air. How do you know it's still there? Somehow that helps me to really get into what it is to simply feel when I apply that same kind of awareness or that same question to my entire being, my entire body.
That need, I'm still doing it.
Right. Thank cool. you for playing along, if you're out there playing along with me.
All right, how about we go to needs, a practice of using needs in a way that's less about thoughts and language, more about presence. I find needs is kind of a tricky one to do that because it's so much about the words, the language of the needs that take us into a different place, I find, when we, myself and others, using that language to find what's the need behind the action or the thought that's triggering, perhaps. But the way that I try to practice needs in a way that supports presence is, as I say some need words to myself, to see if I can actually feel the needs in my body. Simple, but I don't have as many clear, doable ways to do this as I'd like. But if it makes sense to you, pick a few need words, words for needs that really resonate for you in this moment. Like, it could be, you know, well-being and safety, security, or a sense of peace and restfulness or something like that. Maybe it's about connection, love.
Could be learning, since you're in a class.
It's learning, meaning, and self-expression. So just pick a word or two that really resonate for you right now as needs, that just saying the word to yourself kind of feels good right in this moment. And that as you say that word or those few words to yourself, a few different needs, just see if you can actually feel the needs in you, so that it's not just a mental concept that you're sort of in your head, but it's literally something that you can feel, a way to connect to the what some call the living energy in our bodies. It's a way of connecting with ourselves, to talk about the needs that we all want as human beings. The practice of saying the words to yourself, as you do that, see if you can feel the needs as a kind of a living presence of energy in you. Organic, something alive that those words are pointing to, not just the words. Something we value at a conceptual level, but actually into aliveness. All want these things. Anybody share anything about that? Janice.
My comment went back to Newt, the hand, and been an example of how, you know, how do you know your hand is there? I was stuck on that.
So you mean something you wanted to say more about that?
Yeah, I was just wondering if an example of, you know, where Newt has found that helpful.
Oh, okay. Newt, anything you want to say about it?
Yeah, the question for me is just, I've been told by some people that I've worked with that when I say, I'm just feeling, sit here and just feel, that some people have had difficulty kind of accessing that in a way which is meaningful for them. It's maybe because just a lot of thinking comes up in that moment, or some other habit of guessing at needs or something becomes this knee-jerk response to being in the presence of NBC group. And so I've just sometimes found that this suggestion of how do you know your hand is there somehow focuses people's attention on just all that's available is to feel the hand. It's not making any sound. You can't taste it. You can't smell it. And you know you can't see it. So that all that remains really is this just internal feeling of the hand. And somehow that allows people to focus their intention in a way which they weren't previously able to do. And I just said to them, just feel. What's happening in you right now? Just feel. Somehow the question allows a possibility which the other approach doesn't allow. And there's a way of spreading that to, you know, clearly you could extend it. How do I know my elbow is there? How do I know my bicep is there? How do I know my shoulder is there? Especially if you're sitting upright and not leaning against a wall. And somehow putting the question onto the whole body, how do I know my body is here? You just start feeling into your body naturally, or some people find that that allows them to just feel into their body very naturally in a way that previously they kind of weren't able to do. They weren't able to kind of focus in that way on just the sensation of being there. That's the main usefulness that I find in it. For some, it's unnecessary because just saying to them, feel into your body is enough, and some people just can go straight there. But for others, I've noticed, me included, I think I found this question really allowed me to feel the experience of being here, aware of this body in this moment, and feeling into whatever it is, contraction, constriction, expansion, warmth, cold, whatever's going on in there, I just have more access to it with that question. Interested to know if that sheds any light for you. Janice, does that address the question anyway?
I think I'm going to have to think about it a little bit more, but certainly your explanation helps me
okay.
a little bit more. So thank you.
Yeah, and please, you know, bring it back next week or in any subsequent week if you, you know, see what comes up, because it may be the seed point or the start point for some other questions or realizations or something.
Thank you.
Amy.
With new exercise, then kind of going into knees, it was fun for me that my hand kind of curled up. And I imagined holding all these expectations as I thought Newt was going to have to put something in our hand or put an idea there. And so when it was holding it empty, all of a sudden my hand, it was almost like on a cartoon or on a film when somebody turns into sand and kind of blows away. It was like that from my fingertips all the way across, everything just blew away. And it was fun for me because all of a sudden it was attachment dropped away. All the attachments that I had been holding and had been sitting there in silence, holding on to, they were gone. And it was just a really nice, peaceful moment for me. You started talking about need. My mind then went to, I want to go to yoga class and I want to do this. And I was like, okay, well, need. And it became, okay, I want physical strength. And then all of a sudden my mind opened up of, is that universal? And I was thinking about how someone could be ill in the hospital wanting physical strength to just stand. It was just kind of a beautiful moment for me. I just felt like it was universal of not just what I needed, but how do I recognize what other needs are going on in the room, even if you're alone in the room. Brought back that non-attachment for me so I could kind of go back to that.
Thank you, Amy. In case we haven't said it explicitly, how does doing these practices and using the components of the NBC language, how does that relate to spirituality or spiritual practice? What's the purpose? What's the larger purpose of it then? For me, it's presence. So we talked about practicing this kind of presence, and that presence being identifying less with thoughts and more with awareness. And I guess I see that as the spirituality for me of moving from being identified with forms and thinking being a way of, you know, thought forms to the formless that kind of takes shape as form, but that there's a, in my cosmology, my beliefs, that there's a sense that there's this sort of formlessness of intelligence and energy and mystery that then takes form, comes into form. For me, the spirituality is sort of connecting with that formless and being able to transform and then transcend our thoughts and is a way to get more into that formless dimension as well as to be skillful in the world of form.
John, you're talking about the practice of observation that we did, the first practice we did here, as sort of a gateway into that, even if those ideas, because I'm just noticing in me a sort of a familiar anxiety about some of these ideas, some of these concepts, as being something that we can struggle with mentally and make precious little headway with. And yet the simple practice that you were suggesting earlier on of just observing the things in the room can be a kind of simple approach to stepping into some reality that you might experience about being yourself and being in this world and being in existence that suddenly gives those kinds of words meaning. Would you resonate with that way of talking about
it? Yeah, I think.
As John knows, I'm very, very much about the practice and the practical, and so I'm just really wanting to check in about
ground ourselves back in that. Yes. My purpose was to just kind of make the link to why, you know, why are we doing this? But it's easy to then get abstract in a way that then isn't helpful for people. So I appreciate you bringing it back to the grounding of just doing these practices. And then so coming back to the last one related to the components, request versus demand, the one I now do on this that I really like is remembering when I remember about requests, not just, okay, then I can make requests of myself, I can make requests of other people, and there's a lot of power I find in remembering and helping other people get, what are you wanting? But that's even separate from that, this idea of this request being a way that we can give and receive with each other. And that's something I've learned a lot from Marshall. One of the biggest things I've learned about being, I spent a lot of time around Marshall Rosenberg, and I hear him use the phrase a lot, or have heard him use the phrase compassionate giving and receiving. That's something that NBC is for him. So this idea of giving and receiving as a way of being, of acting and moving in the world, and then I see that very tied across all kinds of spiritual religious traditions of giving and receiving joy of that, acting out of that, kind of way to talk about love, care. So for me, the practice I have around this that I really like now is just when I go through these practices for myself to just, when I get to this one about request, asking myself to remember in the recent, you know, the day, like say today, if I look back on my day and say, and just try to remember the times that I was given to, that I could really receive, really enjoy that somebody did something nice for me, somebody did something they didn't need to do, that they just did. Well, and then there's the level that maybe I paid someone, they gave me a haircut or, you know, whatever. I could appreciate that. But then there's also the times when someone just, in my view, just did something because they just wanted to do something nice, and they did, and I was the recipient of it. And not to take those moments, they could be really tiny moments, but to really like see that, oh, someone just gave something to me because they wanted to give something. Yeah, you know, wow. And that there are times when I did that during the day when it was just about, it was fun to do something nice for somebody. Just felt good. And even if it was tiny, something I said or did for my wife or my kids or at the store or whatever it might be. So I ask you to just take a moment and just reflect on your day. And it also makes me more conscious, like in the moment, to really receive something somebody's doing for me and just connect with that gratitude. And if I'm giving to somebody else in the moment. But even if it's just looking back, like for right now, I'm going to ask you to look back and really try to savor and remember times in the day today. Somebody, something for you that you received, something nice. Something that you did, that you gave to yourself or you gave to somebody else. Well, nice just to give. I thought it's just that my wife's not feeling well today, and she asked me to go get the kids at a place they were playing at, and I have this thought in my head, I have a lot to do, and I wanted to get some things done, that I just really enjoyed going and getting them so she could rest. Just in this moment, I kind of connect, oh, that was giving something to her that good to give, that she could just rest and recuperate, and I could go get the kids, and I just like remembering that. Little things. This request, if I go through observing, feeling, needs, requests, it's a practice that I'm enjoying. Okay, Newt, anything you want to add? Practice you have that's a little different around that.
First of all, I just want to say that I picked up a friend from the airport today and put my friend's bag in the trunk rather than having them put it in the trunk. And that's coming from actually a place of, it sounds maybe like not a big deal, it's just a very simple practical thing, and yet it's coming out of a very recent for me actually. I kind of feel like compassionate giving and compassionate receiving is kind of interesting to for me to just play around with that in my mind at the moment, because I normally think in terms of compassionate giving, so I'm going to be sleeping on those two words put together. But the practice for me recently as being something about when in dialogue with someone else and, you know, using NBC to empathize and to self-express and to get out on the table, what are my needs, what are the other person's needs, just so I know what they are. And from that place, sometimes there's a temptation to go into, okay, let's now sit and together kind of contemplate how we can meet your needs as well as my needs and that kind of thing. And it can almost have an element, it's easy to slip into a sort of negotiation about how can we, oh yeah, but that's not going to meet my need if we do that, so let's back to the drawing board, okay, now what? And I think for me, this may not be as relevant or applicable to everyone, you know, it's to be used with caution, I think, if you're in the habit of always putting someone else's needs before your own to the exclusion of your own, perhaps. So then what I'm saying would, I'd want you to treat it with caution and really self-connect about it. But for me recently, I've been noticing a habit of, is there something that I would like to try doing right now which would be purely a contribution to the other person's needs being met or one of their needs being met as a first place to go rather than the question, what needs to happen here in order that everyone's needs get met right now or get met in this situation, in this relationship, in this moment, rather than going there to the everyone's needs, instead starting with, is there something where I could give compassionately right now that I would get joy out of giving and would be about the other person's need? And this is, I keep on saying, I really want to emphasize, this is not about abandoning my own needs. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm definitely not in the habit of abandoning my own needs or making them less important than anyone else's. But it's just been a shift in focus for me, and it's kind of, it's a practice which arises both in the moment with people and also when I'm just thinking about my interaction with them, that kind of thing. So I can do it on my own or I can do it in the moment. And I invite others to play with it if it's meaningful, sufficiently meaningful in the way that I've said it right now. And if not, I can certainly clarify.
Well, I'm thinking of a phrase that I've heard Marshall use a lot over the years. How could I make life more wonderful? Make life more wonderful right now. So that's what I hear in what you're saying. What would be wonderful for me to make life more wonderful for them? Chris?
This reminds me of a little thing that's changed in my relationship with my sons about how my consciously using requests rather than demands has really opened something new up. I have late teenage sons. And, you know, we've finished dinner and in the past I've asked, would you mind doing the dishes? And get a typical response of something like, okay, or do I have to? And in the past I was coming with demand energy. So when I got that response, even if I said, no, you don't have to, I would be grumpy. So there was a consequence. Some years ago when I really got this about requests, I committed myself to, I'm going to really make this as a request and ask this as a request with no consequences. And so I started asking, would you be willing to do the dishes? And I would get the usual response back, and I'd remind myself I was making a request full of choice. And so I would say, no, you don't have to. It's okay if you don't want to. I'm happy to do them. And that happened a few times. And I believe what was happening was the boys were discovering that they could actually trust me. I was really making a request.
Mm-hmm.
Full of freedom. They were free to say no. And it didn't take too long before they then changed to the point where now, when I say that, are you willing to wash the dishes tonight? Very frequently, there's a real willingness that comes back. Yeah, sure, I'll do that for you. It took a little while.
To trust, yeah, that it was real.
Yes. Yeah. And now they seem to be quite happy to do it, loving the giving.
The practice of giving someone the opportunity to give to us, and the way to do that is to really try to make it not any kind of demand, that it's really okay to say no. And if you can ask from that place, it can be a giving to this other person to be able to then enjoy giving to us. Yeah?
Yes. Once they trusted it was a choice, a real choice.
Really okay to say no. It's not a demand.
Then they felt free and liked giving.
Liked giving, yes. Thanks, Chris. Your story, Chris, also reminds me of what's in the booklet I put on for this class of recommended reading, different readings I've found valuable around this topic. And one is Marshall has a booklet. I think it's called Practical Spirituality now. It's a little booklet that Puddle Dancer Press does. And a big part in there is the giving and the receiving that's about honesty and empathy, the giving of being really vulnerable and honest about what's going on in us as a gift, and also giving our attention when whoever's in front of us, and especially if they're upset with us, but regardless, to give that gift of our full presence and attention to them. That's another kind of giving and receiving as a way to get into the place of how we can give and receive with each other rather than getting something.
John?
Yeah?
Just very briefly, there's something about Chris's story which reminds me of something. I don't know. I enjoy being aware of this, and so I want to share it. And that's that sometimes when one moves into what Chris was describing, for example, real true non-attachment to the person saying yes, like real true request, like there's a possibility that they will never wash the dishes again with joy, that it's just not going to happen, and yet you're asking with no attachment, and again, you ask with no attachment, and so on. I have worked with people, and I think I've had the experience in my own life, where sometimes people will actually, it's not as smooth as that they let you wash the dishes a couple of times and then they develop willingness. I've sometimes come across situations where people will test you on bigger things in a certain way. So when you're requesting other things, they'll say no to that. Even things that they've always said yes to, they'll start saying no to. And it seems to be just a natural arising of people really want to trust what you're coming with. And sometimes they're not able to do that immediately. So there's how to name it, you know. Backlash sounds too strong. There's some sort of shift which is about like really wanting to check out, is this really happening? Are we really being given freedom and choice here? Is there really no demand? So it's something that if you're practicing this in your life, you may come across that, and there may be a need to kind of breathe deeply sometimes and to get a lot of empathy. But my finding is that a little bit later, there is an opening. Yeah.
If you don't give up on it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know that we'll get through this next section, but we can pick up on it next time. But I'd like to move into, when you're ready for this, Newt, I don't see any other hands, to go into the last section for this class, was to talk about four principles that I see cutting across lots of different traditions, spiritual traditions and religions, and that I have found useful to pair up with the components of observation, feelings, needs, and requests.
And there are practices here we could make as homework, no, John?
Yeah, for sure. To pick one or a few to just try out of what we've already done or whatever we get done by the end of the call. So let's just start going through it. We'll get as far as we get. The first principle is being in the present moment, something I've seen, heard, and read about lots of different times, lots of different ways. So that seems to be, to me, kind of a universal principle, spiritual principle, of the value, the benefits of being in the present moment, which is an aspect of presence. Talking about presence is to be in the present moment. And I realized as I did this, I like to kind of distinguishing that versus something that sometimes gets confused with that. On the outline, I put being in the present moment, and then in parentheses, versus avoidance of past and future. And this is coming out of my own experience, where I sort of remember myself being, that I was really in the present moment a lot around things, but I think it was in some ways because I was avoiding the future. Like, I just didn't want to think about the future. I didn't want to plan. I just wanted to kind of just sort of enjoy the now, but almost like I didn't want to be responsible for what was going to happen, of creating what I wanted later in my life. And the same with the past, I think, can happen. I think that you can use that being in the present moment as a way to sort of escape planning for the future in a way that's healthy and productive, useful, or dealing with some things that have occurred that I want to learn from and grow from, and how that can influence choices I make. I don't know if that makes sense to people. It's probably not essential that it does make sense, but it's been sort of true in my experience. But that all being said, I think there's just something very, very powerful about being now. And even if I'm thinking about the future or I'm thinking about the past, that I'm really here in this present moment. And I'm not just caught in some stream or swirl of thoughts that are taking me into the future or taking me into the past where I become engulfed in it and lose awareness, but rather that I can really be in the here and the now, you know, as many different traditions talk about. And so the practice of doing that, linking that to the component of observation. So I put being in the present moment with the NBC component of observation in the way we talked about it earlier. And the practice being to notice the times, when am I just really kind of caught up in thinking about the future or the past, and noticing when I'm not in the present moment. And then one way to come back to the present moment, other than just noticing it, is to shift into observation, like we did before, just observing my surroundings, separate from thoughts and evaluations, just bringing myself into observation, observing my thoughts about the future or the past, whatever I'm perseverating on. Just that, I think that being in the present moment applies to more than just observation, but that there's, for me, a usefulness in pairing it up as a kind of anchoring and using one to reinforce the other. Observation is about being in the present moment. I can't observe if I'm not in the present moment. So they kind of reinforce each other in a way I like. So just do that maybe right now. If you notice yourself right now kind of thinking about what are you going to do when you get off the call, or what happened in your day today, or coming right into this present moment, right now, listening to my voice, sitting in whatever room you're in, just observe for a moment to really anchor yourself into the present moment. Observe your surroundings. Observe or notice any thoughts, the thoughts about the future, the past. Right here, now, observing. I'm just going to try to go through a few more of these. Acceptance. So I put that with feeling. Acceptance of what is versus resignation. So I think there's a way to accept what is in a way that's you just resign to life just sucks or I can't do this or whatever. Not that kind of acceptance, but the acceptance that, again, many different, I see different spiritual traditions talking about, that's about a kind of radical acceptance of what is, so that we're not fighting against what is. Or resisting what is, that if something has happened, then it's happened. You know, we spend a lot of energy judging and blaming and saying it shouldn't be this way, it should have been some other way. I do this particularly when I've done something that I should have known better. How could I have done that? What, you know, like I did something wrong. It actually shouldn't have happened that way. And I keep thinking about how it should have happened. I should have done it. And that there's no acceptance there it did happen that way. It just did. And that, you know, could just be accepting that what is. Don't have to fight it. Don't have to think that something's wrong with it or it shouldn't be that way. Or it just is what it is. And that doesn't mean I can take action about changing at this point, you know, doing something to make it different. But that idea of accepting what is because it is. So for me, there are three practices around acceptance and linking back to feelings and feelings and needs. Practice one being just to notice the times either in the moment or when I look back of when and where I'm not accepting. Where is the place? So maybe I ask you to do this just right now real quick. Are there any places in your life or things that you or others have said or done, way things currently are, that you just think, no, this is not okay. I just don't accept it. And again, it's not about the future of what action you might take to remedy it. But just the fact that it is there a place you just, or places, where are the places? My guess is we all have these places where we just cannot accept what is. Even though it is, and it's already happened, some part of us still just fights it. Shouldn't be this way. Shouldn't have happened. Person shouldn't be the way they are. Our spouse should be more understanding of us, consider it, whatever. where are the places where you accept what is in a healthy way, the healthy way of accepting what is? And then, seeing if you can feel it. Just feel the feelings that go on in you and the places that you resist what is. That would be some kind of suffering, probably. And feeling anger, or guilt, shame, depression, anxiety, all that. Feelings that tell us we're caught up in some thinking that's resisting what is. That's one practice to do around acceptance and feelings, the interconnectedness between accepting what is and feeling what we're feeling about that. How about, I'd like to hear from a few people, including Newt, if you have anything to add, but just how this class was for you today, and anything to kind of complete our time together. Before even doing that, I would invite you to pick one, maybe just one or a couple of the practices that we did on the call, and just try doing them for a week. One, you know, just try doing one or a couple, and see if you just play with just trying to do it for a week. And then we can talk about next week what that was like to do, how it was for you to do that. So that's our request of you between now and next time. And anything anyone would like to share about our time together. Really enjoy hearing from a few people, even if it's didn't like it. Just to know how was it for you, even if it didn't meet your needs. I like to hear whatever it is you want to share. Hey, Leslie.
I've really appreciated hearing from different people some of those same questions that come up for me and my grappling with being human, I suppose. I find it very reassuring when I hear that other people are on the same journey. So I've really appreciated that openness and willing to share that.
Yeah, me too. And I'd love to hear even more. You're saying that makes me realize how much I really like people sharing their own lives, their own thoughts and questions. And yeah, so that was particularly meaningful for you, hearing from people.
Yeah, and I've also really appreciated your facilitation of it. You've made it very easy, and thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Welcome. Anybody else willing to say a few words how the class was for you today? Again, even if happy to hear things that didn't work for you, just to connect. Yes, Judy and Tim.
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate that we thought you did a great job, and we also liked hearing from all the other participants. And also, I would like to specifically request if Newt could add more next time. I really appreciated some of the comments that he made and really connected with, I think, almost everything that he had to say. So I'm really interested to hear more from him, and particularly about he had commented on looking forward to talking about loving the jackal, and I'm really interested in that also. So thank you to all of you.
Okay. I'll let Newt maybe lead the next one at all. How about Dee?
Yeah, I just want to appreciate the reminder to be present and to have new and not so new practices to do that. I'm making an intention to take one a day from the ones you suggested and work with it. Thank you.
Yeah, that would be another way to do it. Pick one per day and just focus on, could do different ones, but just one per day and change the ones you work with. Yeah. Okay. Well, and there's some things that we didn't get to that we can do next time. Yeah, there's more that we didn't get to about these principles. Tracy.
I wanted to just appreciate just how much you talked about presence. To hear you talk about it so much in these more kind of spiritual ways was something that I was very grateful for and hoping to hear about. So thank you.
Okay. Newt, anything you want to say in closing?
Just how much I'm looking forward to next week, and I will gladly elbow John aside in a nonviolent way and a nonviolent and spiritual way next week, not for the first time. I'm just looking forward to speaking to everyone again then.
Yes, you're all going to enjoy Newt's humor, I predict. All right, thank you for being on the call tonight. I look forward to talking to you next time.